doing the podcast for now for almost 140 weeks, and it's been phenomenal. But what I've been really racking my brain about how to do is I wanted to record the most boring podcast ever, and I think I figured out how to do that. I want to talk to the president of a board of directors of a theater, and I found one, my old friend, Jim McElvain. Say hi, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
What's it like being the president of a board of a semi-professional theater?
Well, a little boring, actually.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 138, Bored. Not bored. Every not-for-profit theater has a board of directors, and just as every theater is different, so is every board. Jim McElvain is president of the board of directors of the Lamplighters, San Francisco's oldest musical theater company, and the reason you're hearing music by Gilbert and Sullivan. Jim was good enough to spend a few minutes talking with me before rushing off with his family to a 4th of July Giants game, and he started by describing what exactly a board of directors is.
No, what happens is, like anything, it's a meeting of people with liked interests that have to talk about stodgy stuff that help a theater company. And that's budget, it's, you know, some marketing, it's foundation stuff, it's, you know, how we're reaching our audiences. It's the stuff that most audiences don't even think about, but is tangential and important to every theater company.
Not tangential, integral.
Integral, yeah, absolutely right.
English is good, our friend. but first of all, let's describe the Lamplighters. Lamplighters is San Francisco's and arguably America's premier Gilbert and Sullivan music theater, and they've been doing it since the 50s.
1952 we started. It makes it San Francisco's oldest continuous musical theater company. Mm-hmm. We also do light operas from the Eastern European tradition. We also do like My Fair Lady. This summer we're doing My Fair Lady, so we hit the kind of classic English-based American musicals that make sense to our genre and to our audiences.
I directed Where's Charlie there many, many moons ago.
And beautifully so.
And I thought it was wonderful when they decided to sort of expand the repertoire from GNS, but to include these other Eastern European operettas and musical theater that's in the style of.
Frankly, there's only so many times you can continue to do the Mikado and HMS Pinafore and Pirates and all that. We have to circle up with something else.
and yet, you're still doing all.
Exactly. 130 years later, yeah.
And you got involved. I know you got involved because I was there. You got involved with the Lamplighters in high school in the 70s. So, but you graduated up from the chorus to sort of semi-lead roles to now president of the board. So clearly you have, is it a passion for the company? Is it a passion for GNS? What is it?
Well, the Lamplighters are very, very unique because it's really a true family from beginning to end. We socialize together. It's a terrific group of professionals and semi-professionals that just have a lot of fun, but we like being around each other. It's a good group of folks. It's a little like your RSC guys. You try to mix and match people together that like to be together, like to socialize, to go on after shows and all that. So I met my wife on stage. We've raised our two daughters on stage. They've performed with us. The four of us perform together on shows. So it's a family. I've been there 31 years, and not looking back.
Well, and we say semi-professional, not in a qualitative judgment way. It's about whether people are making their livings doing what they do. You have a union orchestra, but you have non-union actors, actors and singers, but many of whom have had professional paying gigs with big opera companies and musical theater companies, but the Lamplighters it's not a professional company in that sense.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, and that, but it also makes it a lot more accessible to people coming up, graduating out of college or at a conservatory, to come and meet, be a part of the chorus, get compromissory roles, and step their way up. We had a woman that came up through the did a lot of leads with us and did 5 years touring in Phantom of the Opera, and who's back now directing with us.
So how much, as the as the board president. You took over the board presidency because the previous president of the board had been there for a very long time, right?
Yeah, he was there 30-plus years as board president, and he was trying to move on, and it made sense in a younger guy to take over.
So you're only, like, the third or fourth board president in the 50-plus years of the company.
I think I'm the third, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how much input does the board have into the selection of the season, the hiring of the personnel, the casting of the leads? How much input do you guys have?
Well, it's actually very important that a board does not have those roles. It's important that a board's responsibilities are fiduciary. We stay after the budget. We support the artistic vision of the company. We set that. We make sure the artistic director doesn't sway from what the mission statement of the company is, but we do not get into the practice of hiring directors, hiring choreographers, hiring music directors. That's really not our place. We make sure the artistic director understands what her role is in that selection, and then if she strays from it, then we have a conversation with her and the general manager. But no, it's important. Boards do not get in the, and should not get in the habit of artistic direction.
Well, it's an interesting relationship between the artistic heads of a theater and a board. And I've been on the artistic side of it. I've never been on the board side of it. And I know of boards that have hired and fired artistic directors, and I know where the reverse has been true.
Right. The artistic director sometimes in big companies, they're the ones like ACT and Michael Tilton Thomas at the Symphony. Those guys run the show. They're the big dogs in town.
And what do you look for in a board member, aside from love for the company and enthusiasm and support of the ultimate product? I mean, are you looking for deep pockets? Are you looking for professional expertise in, like, marketing or any of that stuff?
No, it's important to have a balance. Yes, deep pockets are good, social connections, foundation work, that's really important. But it's good to have an HR person. That's what we're lacking right now at Lamplighters.
Human resource.
Somebody that's got a good legal sense. Somebody that's got a lawyer to make sure our contracts and leases are in order and all that.
And your predecessor was a lawyer.
And still is, and still on the board, and that's good. But again, there's this word out there, succession, and you got to think ahead.
Succession, not secession, right?
We're staying in the United States, yes.
Right, okay.
We're not going anywhere. Although Britain, you know, sometimes is very alluring.
You could have a rumble in the parking lot with a Doyle Cart opera company in London.
But no, it's important to have a balanced board, and it also is good to have a couple of curmudgeons on there. Believe it or not, you have to have a little bit of the tension in there that asks different questions in a different way than just rubber stamping and nodding your head,
right,
and have been with the company for 30 years, and that's the way we've always done it, the way it should be. It's good to have somebody ask, yeah, but why? And how come? And let's try something different. So we've got a couple of guys who have never had theater experience, who come from a different kind of background, and frankly are good to kind of twist things up a little bit.
So you're working your way up to old poop status.
Yes, exactly. I like to say elder. elder statesman.
Eldest.
Hi, I'm Ann H., and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
I have a song to sing, oh.
Sing me a song, oh.
It is sung to the moon by a lovelorn loon who fled from the mocking throng. It's a song of a merry man moping mum, whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum, who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady. Hady, hady, misery me, lackadady. He sipped no sup and he craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
So talk a little about Gilbert and Sullivan, because I think we were lucky at our high school, and I've talked about this in previous podcasts before. We did a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta every single year because our music teacher in high school, Alan Harvey, loved Gilbert and Sullivan, and so he exposed it to us. And, you know, so I've never been to the Doyle Cart. All my times of being in London, I've never actually seen a Doyle Cart show, although I've heard their albums and whatever.
Yeah, well, they're not in existence.
I got all their singles.
They're not really in existence anymore.
Ooh,
but the Savoy Theater was
That's what I mean,
the first theater to have
electricity.
Work electricity, right. And there's a plaque outside because it's now the Savoy Hotel.
Right.
2 summers ago when we were there, we looked at it and went and had a little GNS tour
right.
of all the different stuff. But the importance of Gilbert and Sullivan, okay, real quick. You would not have Oscar Hammerstein, you would not have Jerome Kearns, you would not have Showboat. Now, all of that, there was a transition between the traditional English town hall, music hall kind of stuff to now a book story told through music, which then morphed into the modern American musical. So none of that would have happened. Gilbert and Sullivan were the bridge. And so the fact that they're continually performed today, that they were very satirical and witty at their time, that they poke holes at society, at royalty, at everything that was the class structure, all of that was fodder for their great stuff. Gilbert was a lawyer, so he came from a very intellectual bent, and Sullivan wanted to be a classic musician and kind of got hooked up with this Gilbert guy, but made a fortune off of it. Sullivan always thought he
and
wanted...
And killed him, because he was so upset about not being a serious composer, he died all the way to the bank.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, he did write a couple of, grand operas and all that. Ivanhoe, look it up. And Onward Christian Soldiers, if you know that from your church days, that was a Sullivan tune, but...
I don't know that.
Well, you've never been to church, so
no,
that's
sure.
fine. It would crush...
I got married in one, but let's not get crazy.
So that, I mean, Gilbert and Sullivan, very important to that that constant thread of what we consider the modern American musical, which came out in the 20s with Showboat and all that.
Well, and I remember when the rap music started coming out, and the kids, they started listening to the rap in the early 80s, and there was all this brouhaha, this isn't music, this is not, blah, blah, blah. And at the time, I was going, are you kidding? This is like a classic Gilbert and Sullivan patter song, descended from GNS through I Got Trouble from Music Man, through all that spoken sort of patter, all of Danny Kaye's great patter songs that he did. Rap is just another extension of that tradition. I think it's absolutely, I'm dying to do a rap Gilbert Sullivan one of these days.
When you're lying awake with a dismal headache and repose is tabooed by anxiety, I conceive you may use any language you choose to indulge in without impropriety. For your brain is on fire, the bedclothes conspire of usual slumber to plunder you. First her counterpane goes and uncovers your toes, and your sheet slips demurely from under you. Then the blanketing tickles, you feel like mixed pickles, so terribly sharp is the pricking. And you're hot and you're cross and you tumble and toss till there's nothing twixt you and the ticking. Then your bedclothes all creep to the ground in a heap and you pick them all up in a tangle. Next, your pillow resigns and politely declines to remain at its usual angle. Well, you get some repose in the form of a doze with hot eyeballs and head of your aching, but your slumbering teems with such horrible dreams that you'd very much better be waking.
Well, that's one of the things. Lawrence Ewing, and they have a school show, and so that is the transition that they have done. They took the spoken word first of a song from Pinafore,
right.
and then translated and did it traditionally and the British style, and then rapped it. And so the kids in the class could see, at the assembly, could see the connections and goes, oh, I get it. Written word to a sung word to now this contemporized version.
Is there a recording of that somewhere?
No, I don't think
there needs to be. There needs to be. You need to put it on YouTube. Absolutely. You need to do that. So how are the Lamplighters jumping into new media or expanding? I mean, in terms of podcasts or websites or the Twitter. I know you're such a, you personally don't do the
Neophyte.
Facebook and the Twitter.
Neophyte. We're doing it very badly, as a matter of fact. we have just not gotten nimble enough in that stuff. It's something we should work on. We have a little bit of music clip from our recordings on our website. Woohoo! That was 1998, finally catching up to that.
You've got so many computer geeks and nerds as part of the company, too.
That's a good responsibility to start circling around and all that. And we do have a presence on Facebook and a few other things, but it's not very as robust as it should be, or YouTube and all that.
Oh, and I remember Gilbert Russick was the artistic director of the Lamplighters for many, many years, and I learned a lot from him because I did a little bit of interning there. And I remember we were talking about directors, talking about directorial conceptions. Somebody will take Shakespeare and they'll set it on Mars or whatever. And so we it's back to what you were saying about the original satirical intent of Gilbert and Sullivan is that if you setting Mikado on Mars is redundant because he has already set a classically English story in Japan. That was his original directorial conception, and which is brilliant still. 100-some-odd years later.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, you can tweak and play. We did an updated version of The Gondoliers. We set it in the 1950s because the two gondoliers are the matinee idols, and they come out, and the girls are swoon. And it was really very lovely, and you can do that. But like Shakespeare, if you go over the top or too much, it kind of ruins the original intent.
As long as it's still got to support the text. It's still got, and in this case, the music.
Absolutely right.
You know what? I'm really disappointed because this was nowhere near as boring as I thought it was going to be.
I'll try harder next time.
Whatever.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. You know, despite what Jim said, the Lamplighters do have an online presence. Go to their website, lamplighters.org, and you can find links to their MySpace page, their Facebook page, and their Twitter page. And then send us your patter songs via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Just click on forum. You can also find us at facebook.com, myspace.com/reducedshakespeare. Become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, the very model of a modern Major General Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band, and this week by the Lamplighters. From their CD collection, A Song to Sing, Oh, the Lamplighters Celebrate Gilbert and Sullivan, you heard excerpts from the overture to HMS Pinafore, Three Little Maids from School, and There is Beauty in the Bellow of the Blast from the Mikado, I Have a Song to Sing, Oh, from the Yeoman of the Guard, and the so-called Nightmare Song from Iolanthe. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Sarah Brinks. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Anne H. I'll leave you with If We Shadows Have Offended from the Lamplighters' mashup of Gilbert and Sullivan and Shakespeare called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern's Excellent Adventure. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 138/414 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.